Hi, I'm Norm Shealy.
NormShealy.com.
You are listening to Infinite Consciousness, your infinite access to the world
of the mind.
Hi, this is Eva Herr. Thanks for taking the time to be with us again this week. Tonight I have with us a really good guest. It's Dr. Mark Mancola, and we're going to talk about his new book, Whole Health, which is a really good book giving us a whole outline on energy medicine, Qigong, diet, food, nutrition, and how to early detect and prevent disease. Thank you, Dr. Mancola, for being with us tonight. I appreciate your taking the time.
It's my honor, Eva, to be on.
Thank you so much, Eva.
I'm pleased to be on.
So before we get started, why don't you tell us a little bit about you, your background, what you do, where people can find you?
Sure. First of all, I've been working as a natural health care practitioner and healer for 32 years. I've seen 60,000 appointments over 32 years. Never dreamt that it would expand to the degree that it has. And the process of really kind of unfoldment in my life really was led from patient to patient, and it's here I am 32 years later and able to capture the remarkable discoveries of my healing life in this particular book called Whole Health and share it with the world because, we've seen some remarkable results, and it's sort of my intention to share what I've learned with the world because I'm realizing that I can't do this for another 32 years. So I want to share the nuggets that we've actually discovered and that have brought so much relief and so much help to so many. That's the real key to my work and book.
I think we really have had a quantum leap in the past 5 or 6 years, don't you?
Oh, my God. There's no question about that. No question about that. I felt like we wrote about it in the book, of course, the shift that so many people are going through. So many of us are going through this dramatic tipping point, this shift, this change, this transformational alteration in our being energetically. And, you know, the universe does that every so often. Every so often, just like everything else in the world, or at any micro or macro level, that everything has to shift and change, has to renew itself. Nature does that in every level. I think the universe is doing that, and we're all part of that shift. And so many people are becoming atomically expanded, energetically expanded. Awareness, consciousness is bumping up dramatically. People are thinking thoughts that are so much more expansive than ever before. I think this book is kind of a byproduct of that. My thoughts regarding this book are highly channeled and highly expanded beyond anything that I've written before. So I do believe there's dramatic shifting going on.
Where can people find you?
My website is maxhealing.com, just one word, like M-A-X, maxhealing.com. And that's pretty much one-stop shopping for everything. It's got all of our office numbers. It's got all of our books available and a lot of remarkably enlightening and free materials that are on there as well.
Okay, and before we get on with the interview, do you do phone consultations with folks?
I do. I do consultations from all around the world. I have patients in Greece, I have patients in Europe, I have patients in the Middle East, and I work with people from all over the world on a routine basis. I work with about 15 to 20 people a day.
And I don't want this question to this answer, if there is a long answer, I don't want it to be a long time because I want to get into the meat of your book, but I got to ask it. Every single person that I've ever interviewed that does some book that's on the edge has had some kind of experience in their life, typically a dark night of the soul followed by some illumination. Have you had that happen?
Yes, I have. There's no question about that. I went through a dramatic shift, a dramatic change, and it wasn't all that easy. There was an awful lot of change in my life that actually was represented quite an upheaval. I left my home. I left my marriage. I went through a tremendous amount of shifting. Nothing negative. Nothing horrible. Nobody left any vindictive flavor behind. It was just something that was just a dramatic shift in me spiritually. And my sense was that the universe wanted me to take everything that I have learned and all the healing information that I was given and to share it and to disseminate it for people in simple terms and understandable terms and to create a system out of it. So it's kind of like a spiritual quest on my part and fulfillment of a mission, but it totally turned my entire life upside down. But it's a shocking change in my life that became a very beautiful, beautiful shift and transformation.
Boy, don't I get that. The exact same thing happened to me. It's almost like you have to have your feet knocked out from under.
I think you're right.
Yeah, okay. So we're just going to get into it. This book pretty much covers kind of all the stuff that's out there, energy medicine, you know, supplements. And you've developed kind of like your own thing, I believe. And one of the questions that jumped out with me, because I'm a real science-based person,
yep.
You said electromagnetic voltage waves is triggered by dopamine when the brain detects error.
That's exactly
that
right.
That really intrigued me. What do you tell us about that?
What I'm saying,
there's something in advance.
Well, you know what it is, really and truly, it's kind of like we have this direct connection to an innate awareness. In other words, we tend to get information from the world around us. We listen to television, radio. We read books, we talk to teachers and coaches and loved ones, and we learn from everything around us. So it's usually what I refer to as other, the source of other, where we get our information from. However, innately, we produce a lot of information from a stream of consciousness within ourselves. So how does that stream of consciousness get processed in a way that we can actually determine whether it's effective or not, whether it's proper or not? I say that there's an electromagnetic responsiveness to that whole process. When you're considering running across a busy city street, traffic's coming on and you decide at the last minute, I think I can make it here. And your innate awareness says, yeah, I think we can do this, and we make the run for it. Innate awareness is just instinctual learning. It's internal learning. You get it from within yourself. It's a pure stream of consciousness of which we're all a part and we all have access to. So I say that a lot of the information that we get has an electromagnetic quality to it. We're either going to pass or fail a muscle test based on something that is either effectively truthful and accurate, or it's inaccurate. So if you, for example, hold up your arm under muscle testing, for those of you who are not familiar, you simply raise up your left arm at shoulder's height, and a loved one will tug at your arm with certain questions. In fact, I'll be on Dr. Oz on the 30th of January, and you can actually see this. We actually did this. But it's quite simple. You can simply utter a word. Happy words or sad words will make a difference. If you say words like cancer, if you say words like fatigue, if you say words like sickness, your muscle will weaken dramatically, and you can actually pull it down quite easily. If you utter words like happiness and love and healthiness, your arm will tighten right up. Your nervous system actually has this neurological or neuromuscular reflex that taps right into accuracy or inaccuracy. Positive or negative vibrations, positive or negative electromagnetic response. So your electromagnetics are innately tuned into what works for you and what doesn't work for you. That's why we can actually muscle test it pretty doggone accurately. And the book talks about how to do this, how you can muscle test for food allergies, how you can muscle test for different imbalances in your organ systems, your liver, your kidney, your gallbladder, very, very simply.
So can you tell me, the dopamine thing has caught me because neurotransmitters fascinate me, and I know that, you know, dopamine is connected to ADHD and to Alzheimer's and, you know, all those kinds of things. How do you know that it's dopamine, and what is the significance of that? What is the source? Why is it dopamine?
Well, first of all, you're talking about adrenal sympathetic responses. We have two different, I always say we have two different nervous systems. We have what I refer to as an efficiency system and an emergency system. So it's sympathetic and parasympathetic for those who are more technical about it, but I simplify it for folks to try to understand it more simply, that you have an efficiency nervous system and an emergency nervous system. Now, obviously, when you're in the emergency mode, you've had too much coffee, you're stressed out, life is kind of difficult, too many demands, too much work, etc., you're not at your most efficient level. So you're going to produce more dopamine during those experiences, and dopamine is a very alarming and very alerting neurochemistry that actually keeps us on the edge and keeps us performing at a very intense level. So I say that you produce parasympathetic and sympathetic hormones, or emergency and efficiency hormones. When you're producing efficiency hormones, you're much easier, you're much more relaxed, your brain is in more of a parasympathetic or a deeply relaxed state. You're perhaps in more of an alpha brainwave state, you're more efficient, you're more consistent with information and dissemination. Whereas if you're uptight, if you're stressed, you're producing a lot more these stress-based hormones, these fight-or-flight hormones, you might be not quite as efficient. You might not be quite as effective at determining the outcome. So you have this constant flow of neurological energy in your brain that either is supporting the notion of effectiveness and efficiency or less effectiveness and emergency.
Okay. And just so people know, you're not an MD, so we're not attempting to treat or diagnose. And we didn't cover this. What is your background?
I have a PhD in health. I have a master's degree in nutrition. I have a bachelor's degree in psychology. And I graduated undergraduate school from Franklin Pierce University in New Hampshire. And I went to Goddard Cambridge graduate program in Vermont, and moved to Cambridge and they had a graduate program for independent study in Cambridge, which I attended way back in 1981. But I basically take my information largely from a lot of the hard work and studies and observation of patients, which I've seen 60,000 people over the last 32 years. And I developed my own system from all that. Largely taken from Chinese medicine and adapted to make it simpler and make it more Western and more identifiable for the Western mind.
I could sit here and ask you questions for the rest of the night, I promise. On different diseases, because what you do fascinates me. But I'm going to give you a little bit different free rein than I do most of the people that I interview, because mostly it's like a deposition question answer. But since you're so different with your, I'd like for you kind of to give you free rein and talk about what you want to talk about, what you think's important with your Qigong and your diagnosing and early detection. But before you do, I have one question, because I had a massive heart attack last year, and one thing you said in your book intrigued me. You talked about cardiac intrinsic ganglia being the little brain within the heart.
Yeah.
Just above the heart in my chest, right in the middle. And I know that a lot of doctors are wondering about this. I have a friend, Steve Sinatra, and another guy, a friend, John St. Cyr, and we talk about this feeling that's right there. And many people go to the hospital thinking they're having another heart attack. And really, it's not the heart at all. It's something else right there in the middle. Maybe central nervous system or something, but whenever I do Qigong, the tightness goes away. Can you help people understand that so maybe somebody else can get benefit like I do?
Yes, well, first
of all,
doctor,
you know what that is, that spot?
That is the cardiac intrinsic ganglia, and it's the...
Oh, okay.
And it's the idea that Dr. Andrew Armour Heart Math Institute did a tremendous amount of research out in California over the years and found that you actually process information intellectually or from an emotional perspective. So it's our emotional intelligence that sort of initiates our response to life. So whether something is good or bad, whether something is safe or unsafe, whether something works for us to our advantage or disadvantage, or it's healthy for us or unhealthy for us, either a relationship, a food, a circumstance, we're literally evaluating it first through our heart intelligence. So everybody thinks that the big brain operates first. The way that Dr. Andrew Armour describes it, it actually the initial processing of information takes place in the mind or the brain, as it were, within the heart. The heart has a little brain called the cardiac intrinsic ganglia. And all of our information that we process, good for us, bad for us information, begins and is initiated in the heart. So there's a lot of people that have impulses and reactions that are much more refined, much more sensitive, sensitively attuned. There's a lot of people that are more intuitively developed, a lot more people that are more expanded in that awareness. And they actually feel more energy in the heart. And actually, it's kind of ironic that the heart produces thousands of times more energy and has a thousands of times more active energy field than the brain has. So the heart is actually where our life begins. It's where our decisions begin. It's where our dissemination of safety or unsafety begin. It's where our life is determined. So our life really is determined, and realistically, it's established at a heart intellectual level. It's pretty remarkable. But in your case, I'd say, in a lot of other folks' cases, your heart is extremely sensitive, ever aware, ever tuned in, ever intuitive, and probably highly reactive. That's why I think when you talk about Qigong, you're actually bringing in more of the spiritual connection. It takes the spirit to calm the heart. Sometimes the heart is overreactive or oversensitized, and it's extremely sensitive. You know, years ago, I remember I had somebody who came in to see me who was a very famous, world-famous international psychic. She worked with the FBI and the CIA discovering bodies, lost bodies, and all that sort of stuff. Extremely gifted. I said, you know, you're very fortunate to have the gift yet. She said, yeah, but it came from a lot of pain and suffering. I said, well, what do you mean? So my dad was physically abusive when I was a kid, and I'd be up in bed at night, and I'd have to kind of sense and feel where he was at all times. I could sense when his car was a couple blocks away. I could sense when he came in the house, and it was all for protection. She said, I was so geared to making certain that I was safe and protected that I actually had to hone in and perfect my intuition. So a lot of people who are intuitive have a lot of sensitivities that were cultivated from a lot of suffering, a lot of sensitivity around them. So they were forced to have to get really good at this process of dissemination intuitively. That means to me that the cardiac intrinsic ganglia has been very, very, very active in those lives. So a lot of people who are extremely sensitive have a very active cardiac intrinsic ganglia. So I'd say that's probably what's going on with you. And, of course, the perfect solution for that is to calm that heart energy with Qigong spiritually. And that was a brilliant move on your part.
I was just so lucky to have a friend who did medical Qigong that lived by me. I'm just so lucky. So is there something, I don't want to get tangled up in that, because I will. You have to be careful with me. I'll just keep on and keep on. It fascinates me. But since you do nutrition, are you aware of all the stuff going on with MTHFR? And I noticed it in your book, but it's just interesting to me.
What do we mean, all the stuff?
All the new research going on with that genetic mutation, MTHFR.
Yeah, I am. I'm aware of it. I think it goes back to a lot of what my feelings are about that. Go back to a lot of Dr. J. Craig Venter, who's the father of the modern human genome. I don't think anybody on the planet has done more genetic research than J. Craig Venter. And he wrote a piece a number of years ago that said that genetic determinism has been dead for 25 years. And he said, if you extrapolate, you got 30,000 genes. And if you do the math, you're only like increasing probability factor for an expression of disease genetically at 13.3%. So the bottom line of it is, I don't know that I'm entirely on board with the whole concept of genetic determinism. I think the jury's out based on what I've learned from J. Craig Venter.
I guess I know so many people have it right now. How would you address it?
Well,
here's
one other really, before I say that, there's another really important point about that. And that is, you know, you can change a gene 0.1% every 250 generations. So you're not going to change a gene. However, genetic behavior, gene behavior, can be changed in 0.7 seconds. So when you think about how easily we can change our genetic behavior with diet, with nutrition, with meditation, with Qigong, that's what I'm interested in. So when anybody has a proclivity or a tendency toward a genetic factor that looks like it's actually increasing their probability for a certain disease componentry, I'd say, first of all, it's only 13.3% or thereabouts. Number two, it's what are you eating, what are you thinking, how are you working your life, how's your stress levels, are you praying, are you meditating, are you doing your Qigong, et cetera, et cetera. Those are really important. You know, one of the reasons why homeopathy is so important to me, and why natural medicine and the concept of holism in general are so important to me, is because we can shift and change the energetic properties and the behavior of genes, and again, quite swiftly, quite easily. So what I would do is, in our system, we actually look to root reference the problem. In other words, it doesn't matter to me. I shouldn't say it doesn't matter to me, but I'm less concerned about what flavor the disease is or what the genetic tendencies of the disease are. I'm interested in the energetic properties. In other words, where is your fortress weakest? Is it liver, kidney, gallbladder? So one of the things we talked about earlier, Eva, we talked about muscle testing people for the energy field of their organs. So what Whole Health System does is teach the reader how to actually diagnostically tap in at an energy level to determine where the organ systems are that are weakest. We got to study the fort, not just the enemy that's attacking. So where is the fort at its weakest? Is it liver? Is it kidney? Is it gallbladder? Is it lungs? Is it spleen? So wherever the weakness is, we start there. Then we communicate through the body, through different muscle testing procedures, and find out which foods work, which foods don't work. So I go through this detail of finding out, first of all, where the organ systems are that are weakest. Let's say it's a kidney. Then we go from there to muscle testing foods from the kidneys or off of the kidneys to see what the kidney dialogue is about wheat, about dairy, about rutabagas, about onions, about tomatoes and peppers. We go through an entire extensive food list, because my feelings are, if you're flunking 4, 5, 6 different foods, 8 different, 10, 12, 20 different foods, these foods that you're not passing energetically are representative of foods that are weakening your root. Your weakest root system is really representative of your immunity. So you can't bypass your weakest root. If your kidneys are the weakest root system and they're not tolerating 25 different foods, I say by avoiding those foods for a certain period of time, you're allowing your kidneys to strengthen, to fortify, and to replenish and rebuild. So it's a matter of getting out of the way. There's a book that I wrote not too long ago called Let Health Happen. And it suggests that the best way to heal isn't to problem solve by layering, you know, by putting a medicine on top of a problem and another medicine on top of a problem, but rather getting in touch with where the problem is and how to basically cooperate with your weakest system. If you learn to cooperate with your weakest system, the body will right itself. And that's what I'm most impressed with, that whole idea that we've, for the past 32 years, had tremendous results encouraging and putting the body in position to heal itself. We don't have to come in with both guns blazing. We have to allow the body to talk to us about where it's sensitive, what it needs, and then to allow it to heal itself, put it in a position to heal.
So for people who have trouble knowing if little mind is getting in the way when they calibrate like that, is there one technique that's better or more reliable? Does that make sense?
Yeah, no, it makes perfect sense. And I think that, you know, in general, like we're talking about, it's a matter of, as we said earlier, appealing to the spirit, because the spirit is actually the calming influence of the heart. The heart can get kind of excited and brings a certain amount of yang energy or exciting energy into the life process. The heart is where passion is, it's where sensuality is, it's where commitment is, it's where energy is. And thank God for our beautiful hearts to do that for us. But sometimes it gets a little overactive, a little kind of zealous, and we need to come in with the spirit to calm it and to basically bring a different, more yin influence in to calm it down. That's the beauty of the heart and the spirit. So things like Tai Chi, yoga, things like polarity, things like a variety of different energy exercises, Reiki, for example, all really great ways to counterbalance that excited heart. But specifically, yeah, there are exercises. I say if the heart's where the issue is, you want to talk directly to that heart. I always say that you got to go right to the root source. So I put both hands over the heart, close the eyes, do some deep breathing, and do some Qigong or some meditation that's focused on calming the heart. You need to go directly to the source. But I'd say that any kind of spiritual exercise, like some of the ones we have in the book, for example, we list a number of different Qigong exercises in the book that are really useful for that. But simply putting your hands over your heart alone and closing your eyes, huge, huge shift, a huge transformational shift in your energy field. So the heart knows what you're trying to do. It knows what the intention is. Intention is extremely important. And if you have a calming, healing intention to calm and love and care for your own heart, it's going to know that. So I say that it's really important to kind of bring spirit into heart.
Speaking of that intention, you talk about two prerequisites for transmitting thought. You want to mention that quickly before we go on?
Well, I mean, yeah, I think, you know, in a general sense, I think the idea of compassion is really important. I think compassion is one of the key things that leads us into that process. So in other words, if you're entering into a healing experience and you want to be inspired by it, it requires compassion. You need to really care about who you're working with, even if it's yourself. You know, folks have a hard time sometimes directing the power of compassion into their healing experience. You know, especially in our case as professionals, if you've been doing it for 32 years, it gets a little bit easy to get lazy and just say, okay, it's just another day at the office. If you're in that position, I always tell my interns, you're in the wrong line of work. So number one, it's all about compassion. You got to really care about and direct the intention with a sense of power and force. I really care about this person. I really want to make a difference. I'm going to invoke a strong chi or strong energy or life force into this healing process. It matters, number one. Number two, focus and concentration. I mean, you can't get distracted or you're not going to get very far. I think it's extremely important to focus your concentration into what I say, lock it in, laser beam style. So if I'm looking to heal somebody, if I'm looking to work with somebody, I focus that concentration laser beam style to whatever organ functions or whatever systems I'm trying to work with. Like I said, it's the heart, it could be the kidneys, it could be the spleen. I really laser my concentration in on that whole process.
Okay. Now I want to talk a little bit about your chapter, energy diagnosis. I want to give you a list of things here that you can talk about.
Mm-hmm.
You talk about six pernicious influences, the five flavors and five emotions. And before you go into all that, I want to understand what you mean. Imbalances may cause external damage to spleen, heart, or whatever it is, or internal. What's the difference in external, internal?
Yeah, well, when we're trying to diagnostically tap into the patient, whether it's us or somebody we love, I think it's really important, first of all, to set some boundaries and some root systems here. We want to get to the bottom of what's going on, obviously, or you're not going to get very far. So diagnostically, at the energetic level, you got to realize that everything begins diagnostically, either internally or externally. Internal is emotion, it's thoughts, it's your spirit, it's your dreams, it's the way your mind and your spirit and your inner self really projects through your life experience. And we all know that certainly stress is something we use, all that term we use quite often in our culture, in our world nowadays. But stress is representative of sometimes negative thinking, the sense of being overwhelmed at an emotional level by a lot of the circumstances and conditions of life, which can be very, very difficult on us. And those are all internal representations of health. It can actually take over the process. One of the things we do with the whole health healing system when we're actually diagnosing people with muscle testing is actually determining whether everything is rooted internally or externally and to what extent. out of 100%, is it 80% internal? Because then we need to treat the subject internally with Bach flowers, with classic homeopathic, with meditation, with Tai Chi, with yoga, with Qigong. We need to work more at a subtle energetic level that's going to help the mind, the emotions, and the spirit. So that's internal. External is purely cellular. It's tissue-based. It's organ-based. Purely physical. So it's kind of like differentiating between energy and matter when you're diagnosing somebody and determining how much we have to focus on either one.
That makes perfect sense. Okay. So I'm just going to let you talk now about whatever you think is important. Those are some interest areas, but you got about 30 or so minutes. You can talk about what you think is most important, unless you just want me to ask questions.
No, that's fine. I want to bring you back in. I don't want to just usurp all the time here. But, I mean, first of all, I think it's really important to appreciate, from our cultural perspective, that the human electromagnetic biofield produces 0.025 volts of electricity per centimeter, which is about 10 hertz, and it produces an individual ever-changing energy signature. So in other words, everybody produces energy. We know that. We do electroencephalograms. We do electrocardiograms. We know that. We do a lot of different electromagnetic diagnostics in our culture. We don't talk much about it, though. So we produce a biofield. Researcher Rutger Weaver at the Max Planck Institute back years ago determined that it was 0.025 volts per centimeter at 10 hertz. So we know that there's a specific signal, if you will. And that specific ever-changing energy signature is something that I think we're really tapping into here, because to simply look at a physical cellular body from a purely material cellular perspective is invoking pure mechanistic chemistry. And mechanistic chemistry it's never been adequate enough for really fully understanding the phenomena of energy. In fact, you might even say it's become a bit of a barrier, especially in the area of medicine and healing. We are unique, deep, intense, globally developed universes unto ourselves. There's so much to the human experience. Think about the fact that your unconscious mind, most people think their conscious mind is really powerful, and it is. At the first of the year, right around the first of the year, every year, everybody's always making their New Year's resolutions. I'm going to lose weight this year. I'm going to lose 20 pounds. I'm going to the gym this is the year. I'm going to the gym, et cetera, et cetera. And they have this powerful intention to do it. And then you can do great stuff with that powerful conscious mind. The conscious mind is powerful enough. It produces 2,000 bits of information per second. Think about that. 2,000 bits of information per second. That's remarkable. As powerful as that is, your unconscious mind, 400 billion with a B. So that just kind of points out just how detailed, how intense, how universally expanded our minds and our consciousness is. We are very unique energetic beings. We have tremendous, tremendous amount of potential if we start to look at our potential at an energetic level. Once again, we're looking at ourselves purely as cells. I always say each and every day we pass through our lives with profoundly limited appreciation for our fathomless depths. And beneath the illusion of our cellular protoplasm and personality, there's a universe of energy constantly changing and looking for attention. Again, like we talked about the cardiac intrinsic ganglia, it's looking for us to recognize it. It's looking for us to tap into it, to dialogue with it, which is why I think the system, the whole health system, is so important and why it's such an expression of love from my perspective, that I want the world to really appreciate itself and to tap in and to kind of finally become more developed and to come of age as a culture and as a planet, to tap into itself at an energetic level and to be able to diagnostically find out what the body's calling for, what the organs are calling for, and to energetically be able to kind of dialogue and communicate with our vital organ systems and our tissues. So the idea of our emotions, our mind, our energy fields, these are really important communicating parts of our being that need to be connected with. Energy is in a constant state of flux. It's always talking to us. It's always changing and shifting. People often ask me how I feel about things like the blood-type diet. I like that diet from the perspective it's looking for uniqueness and individuality. The problem is blood doesn't change. Energy does. So what I've done is I put together a system that actually is representative of our ever-changing energy needs and our ever-changing energy field. Whatever we tolerated yesterday may not be the same tolerance today. You can eat a food on one day and do well with it, maybe not the next day. You can't have it 2 days back to back. These are all things we need to be able to tap into. And people think that they're in a state of constancy. I was reminded that the atoms that appear as your stomach lining are replaced every 5 days. Think about that. The atoms that appear as your skin are replaced every 4 weeks. The atoms that appear as your liver are replaced every 6 weeks. The atoms that make up your entire physical body are replaced once a year. So you're not the same person this year as you were last year. You look the same, but you're not.
What about your heart? How often do they replace?
That's 16 weeks.
Okay.
So it's 4 months. So the objective is here to realize we're ever changing, we're energetic, we have different needs at an energetic level, we need to tap in, and that's what I tried to do is put a system together that helps people dialogue and diagnostically tap in.
This is a beautiful book, it really is.
Thank you so much.
Could you talk about the six pernicious influences, the five flavors, the five emotions, and the qi body clock?
Yeah, well, that kind of takes us back to Chinese medicine. Again, the inspiration for whole health is Chinese medicine. The Chinese are always looking to, you know, first of all, that's the thing I appreciate best about them is they're actually looking to constantly analyze and observe. You know, think about this. Chinese medicine isn't based on double-blind studies. Western medicine is based on double-blind studies. Chinese medicine is based on 3,000 years of observation. So they're observing things continuously. They say, what matters in this universe in terms of what keeps us balanced and healthy and well is tapping in and being conscious of our surroundings, internally and externally. So the idea that they look at what are called pernicious influences, influences that make us sick or that create imbalances. You know, Mom used to tell you to make sure you dress warm. You say, Mom, people don't catch colds when they're not wearing their coats. Mom was right. Cold is a pernicious influence that deters the kidneys. So the Chinese said each organ system is sensitive to some kind of pernicious influence. The spleen, for example, is determined to be sensitive with dampness, moisture, humidity. And dryness is the lungs, and heat damages the heart. So each one of these influences are what we call pernicious influences, hot, cold, dry, moist, etc. So cold, again, upsets the kidneys. The liver doesn't do very well with wind as well. Liver and lung both sensitive to wind. But they actually took the time to say, look, if you want to stay out of the wind, wrap up your neck, put a scarf around you, it's going to make a difference. They actually paid attention to these things for thousands and thousands of years. So when they said that these things existed, they weren't just looking at it from a double-blind study or just dreaming this stuff up. They were looking at it from years of observation. So the pernicious influences pretty much are environmental influences or meteorological-type influences that have a negative influence on our organ systems. They also, you know, put together this entire kind of connection with flavors and tones and sounds. You know, they go into tremendous detail at determining all the different energetic influences. I mean, like if you play notes on a piano, A, B, C, D, E, F, G, they're not going to have, each one of those notes is going to have a different vibrational effect on a different organ system. So, and by the way, in different, I go beyond their determination. I say I agree with them that at each note, for example, each type of weather, are going to have a different influence on different organ systems. I say it goes even further. It's individually different. So if I lined up 25 people, I'd say that there's going to be a slightly different response from different people. So in other words, if I hit the key of A on the piano, in most cases, the key of A is going to affect the kidneys, according to Chinese medicine and their observations. And I think it's true. But there's going to be some people who are a little bit more affected at an adrenal gland area or at a thyroid or a thymus or a hypothalamus or an anterior pituitary or whatever. So I think that it goes a little bit deeper than actually they determine. But the beautiful part about what they did by breaking all these remarkable factors down is take the time to individualize the connections of energy. So, you know, you and I think about it in this culture very rarely, and they thought about it continuously and expressed it in very detailed form. You and I think about it, you go to a party, there's 25, 30 people at a party. At the end of the night, you think to yourself, I really got along with Jim, but I didn't like Nancy. You know, we had a good chemical connection, Jim and I took his phone number, and we're going to connect, have lunch, whatever. The point is, people have certain chemical connections that are realistically energy connections. So that when the energy is really good, it makes us feel good. When the energy is not so good, it doesn't make us feel good. That's true of every note on the piano. It's true of every type of wind or type of influence that's weather-based. So whether it's a flavor, like the five flavors that you talked about, sweet, sour, pungent, salty, and bitter, or whether it's the notes on the piano, like we said, every different manifestation is a different form of energy. It's either going to have a positive or a negative interaction with every other form of energy. So the Chinese and Chinese medicine is really kind of the inspiration for whole health tapping into where the energies work and where they don't work. And that really is the most important component to developing a healthy system.
So can you go into each one of these? Because I want people, when we hang up the phone, to be able to, like your five flavors, sour, bitter, sweet, pungent, salty.
Well, first of all, we begin with the five elements, first of all. Okay, they start this whole cosmology, and that's really what it is. It's a cosmology. They start this whole process, this whole concept of the universe having different representations that are all kind of unified in their own unique way and have interrelationships that are unique as well. So it all begins with what they call the five elements. The first element is wood. Okay, so wood is representative of the beginning of the year. It's representative of spring. It's representative of the liver function, gallbladder function. It's representative of the whole concept of you know, wood basically stretches itself out. Of course, trees stay rooted. Trees don't want to move. They don't like to move. So the wood element likes to stay put. So I always tell people, when people have sensitive gallbladders or livers, it's basically the expression of their wood element saying, I don't want to move, I don't want to change, I don't like this constant changing and adaptation that I'm being pressed on. So whenever there's a lot of stress, I always tell people, if you want to see a bad liver, you look at a military kid, a kid who's been shifted and moved and moved and moved and moved and moved from school system and home to home. They often invariably have gallbladder sensitivities or liver sensitivities because wood doesn't like move, likes to root itself. That's kind of the way they would think about the wood element. The next element would be fire, and fire speaks for itself. It's very young. It's middle of summer. We're past spring now. We're looking at the summertime. We're looking at a flavor called bitter, and bitter releases a lot of fire. So what is, you know, let's translate that for a minute. The fire element, as the second of the five elements, is representative of the inflammatory response. And we use the word inflammatory quite often these days in terms of the healthcare world. Inflammatory is hot, it's red, it's inflamed. And the word, and the second part of that prefix explains everything, F-L-A-M, inflamed. So there's a fire raging in an inflamed shoulder or knee or whatever, or an inflamed liver. So the objective is to use a bitter flavor. Bitter will actually release that. So bitter will bleed off or drain out that excess heat and that excess inflammation. So if I think about how to apply that to health in the Chinese fashion, I can use bitter herbs like barberry. I can use bitter herbs like Oregon grapefruit. I can use bitter herbs like burdock root to drain off any kind of inflammatory conditions that I might be contending with. So releasing that heat, releasing that fiery componentry with bitterness, because bitter as a flavor will do that. Next, the middle of these five elements would be earth. Earth is representative of the spleen. Spleen and stomach work together in the earth element. And sweet is considered the normalizing, the balancing, the harmonizing flavor for that element. So again, you think about the stomach feeling a little bit restless maybe after dinner, your stomach's a little bit full. What do you have? What do we have after dinner? We tend to have dessert, you know, hopefully a healthy dessert, hopefully not an unhealthy dessert. But the sweet element calms that stomach and actually aids the digestive process, according to Chinese medicine. So the spleen element, spleen and stomach element require that sweet flavor for harmonization. Now, if you really translate this literally in terms of ancient Chinese medicine, sweet is not simply referred to as food. That flavor is actually something that actually spreads through the translation of life itself. So is your life sweet? Do you have a sweetheart? Is your life filled with sweetness? Is it something that is pleasurable and enjoyable? Do you like your work? Do you like your love? Do you like your mate? Do you like your home? Do you like your life circumstances? That is really all representative of sweetness in Chinese medicine. So if any of that stuff is missing, then your spleen and your stomach are going to be disturbed. And subsequently, when you think about eating a big meal and not being at peace and not really having an enjoyable life, a sweet life, maybe you're even having some dissent at the dinner table, so an argument at the dinner table, you're not going to digest very well. So you need something sweet, which is peace, harmony, a good, quiet dinner with somebody you love, and then a nice, healthy dessert afterwards. So those are kind of ways to translate that. The next element would be the fourth element. That would be metal. Metal. The metal element is represented of the lungs and large intestines. Metal really tends to have an affinity for pungency. So when you think about pungency, cayenne pepper or things like oregano or any kind of spices, you know, garlic, any of those kind of pungent spices. Those are the spices, those are the flavors that actually support and help the lungs in the lymph system, in the large intestine. Now, think about this. Folks who tend to have worms or any kind of parasites, and that's not uncommon, folks. Believe me, it's quite common these days, especially with the amount of meat that people are eating. So folks have a lot of worms, a lot of parasites, which is, again, becoming very common in the large intestine. One of the better things for that is a vermifuge, like garlic. Garlic will kill a lot of parasites. So there you go. They were thinking in those terms with pungency. Also, you want to think in terms of pungency as being good for the lungs. If the lungs are filled up with any kind of phlegm or mucus, sinuses, little sinus infection, little upper respiratory stuff, we know that when we eat spicy food, hot spicy soup, what happens to your nose? It runs. That's because you're dissolving a lot of that mucus. So that's actually how they translate that issue. So again, pungent, spicy stuff, cayenne pepper, et cetera, great for the metal influence for the lungs and large intestine. Last but not least, the fifth element is the water element. Water is representative of kidney and bladder, and kidney and bladder have an affinity for building up a lot of fluids. So you got to regulate the sodium. So salt is actually the flavor there. Now, it's not salt like we tend to think of. That doesn't mean you're gonna use a lot of salt and pepper. It means that sodium is available in certain foods like pears and grapes as well. There's a whole breakdown. There's a book that I wrote years ago called The Tao of Qi, which means the way of energy. And I broke down all the different five flavors, and I have just an entire listing of every food known to man, and it's classified in one of these five flavor applications. But many of them, like Swiss chard, is considered a salty food. Most of your green leafy vegetables have a salty texture to them, and grapes have a salty texture, salty classification, as do pears, as does celery. So a lot of these things actually have the ability to support, strengthen the kidneys and the bladder, and have the ability to actually neutralize and balance out their energetic systems. That's pretty much a good read on the five elements, the five organ systems, and the five flavors and how they interact.
I just want to say to my listeners that in your book, you go into each one of those elements, but you also give so much more information than you already did. You give symptoms, you give that they might have, you give things, nutrition that goes along with it. So take a look at his book and read all of that, because he gives you even more information how you can apply it to your own life. So what about the five emotions? What was the other thing that I have lost my notes?
Well, once again, you know, when you think about each organ...
Flavors and emotions.
Yeah.
The emotions.
Yeah, the emotions. When you think about each of these organ systems, in ancient Chinese medicine and in the work that I do with the whole health healing system, we're of the belief that, you know, the more sensitively attuned you get energetically, the more efficient that you get at determining a lot of these sensitivities and vulnerabilities, the more equipped you are to do something about them to bring the body and the organ systems back into balance. So it's really important to know, and it's a beautiful concept when you think about it, that each organ system is like a separate person unto itself. So like your body is a house, and there's family members living in the house, and each one of those organ systems, liver, kidney, gallbladder, et cetera, are all different family members living in that house. And to have the utmost of respect and appreciation and to an understanding for them and to embrace them as really unique entities unto themselves is really, really important. So the first element, again, we talked about was the liver. Liver and gallbladder are representative of an emotional spectrum as well. So when you think about the liver and the gallbladder, you're thinking about anger. You know, and anger is something that's thought of in many cases as an unhealthy thing. It's not at all unhealthy. It's a natural emotion. There's natural ways to express it. And I always say that the art of maintaining a balance in your liver and gallbladder and your wood element with emotion is to understand how to be angry without being hostile. There's your balance point. So when people get overly angry, they create disturbances in the liver and gallbladder. And you know, it's also really a negative thing to repress it, to not be angry enough. You know, there's a balance point. To be assertive without being hostile is really the key. Because people tend to get resentful if they don't let their energy out, if they don't express themselves. They become kind of passive-aggressive, and they create a lot of liver problems for themselves. So to be healthy in this wood element, or healthy in the liver gallbladder, internally, remember we talked about the difference between internal and external. We're not talking about cellular liver. We're talking about the emotional, the energetic liver, the internal liver, not the external liver. And again, one creates the other one. That's the other point. So if I have a problem with the repression of my anger, or if I'm overly angry and overly aggressive, Either of those extremes is going to cause physical problems in my liver from the internal perspective. So you're initiating disease internally, and it's spreading into the external component. That's really important to understand that. So there's the liver gallbladder. Number two would be the heart, small intestines. That is the fire element, and that's pretty easy to figure out. That could be hatred. That can be really strong. Anger goes to the next level. It becomes fire. So it can become hatred. It can become a really powerful form of anger that just doesn't get expressed and finally explodes. That's more liver. That's more heart oriented, and that's actually the heart element, or referred as the fire element. So obviously, we want to get that under control, because that tends to create self-destruction. So when I get too enraged and too upset, we've all seen people really, sports. You watch different sporting events from time to time. It tends to be an avenue where a lot of folks actually just lose their cool completely. And I like that term. Think about this in relationship with what we're talking about. The fire element, losing your cool. So if you lose your cool, you're too fired up. And we've seen people get red in the face. We've seen people get very disturbed, apoplectic, if you will. And again, that becomes very self-destructive and destructive in general. So you want to get control of that potential rage, or that potential hatred that just kind of seethes out of control and really creates a lot of heart damage, a lot of heart disease. The real key balancing agent emotionally for this would be joy. So the objective is to find a way to be joyful, to find a way to embrace the process. After you've expressed your anger, after you've expressed your disdain, if you will, at a heart and at a liver gallbladder level, but in a way that is actually not hostile, as we point out. Number three, spleen, the earth element. Emotionally, we're talking about a couple different things. We're talking about anxiety, worry, pensiveness. The Chinese use the term pensiveness. We might think of that as just worry. I know my dear mom used to always say, I can't help worrying all the time for you kids. Anytime we were out at night in the car when we were teenagers, she wouldn't go to sleep. She wouldn't go to bed at 9 o'clock when she wanted to. She'd sit up all night until we came in the door because she was worried about us. And she used to say, I can't help it. That actually is indicative of a spleen that is overactive. The energy in her spleen was internally excessive. So we might have actually done something with my mom, like put her on some, there's a Bach flower remedy actually called white chestnut. White chestnut actually is a perfect Bach flower remedy for people who just can't seem to control that worry. They get obsessive about their worry. They want to get control over it, want to slow it down. You can do that with white chestnut. It's a great way to do that. There's an awful lot of really powerful Bach flowers, by the way. There's 38 of them altogether, and they're just remarkable at working the internal sensitivities of our energy at a visceral level. So these organ systems really do have their own connection to our emotions, to our feelings, through their balance or imbalance. And Bach flowers are a really good remedial way to bring them back into balance. Next would be metal, lungs. That's grief. That's sadness. And the objective of sadness is obviously not to get so sad that you can't shake it. A lot of folks get into funks, long-term depressions. They entertain the whole concept of sadness and grief so intensively, and they open themselves up to that energy so intensively. I've seen patients over the years that actually almost embrace it, almost like sadness. Melancholy is almost an experience that they become accustomed to. It's like an old friend. You have to be very, very careful of that, because you can get stuck in that zone of melancholy and never quite get out of it. And there's, again, a Bach flower that I'd recommend for melancholy, for grief, for sadness. And by the way, this doesn't mean just, the balanced expression of sadness, because we all go through sad experiences, losses of loved ones, etc. You want to let your sadness out. You want to channel it. You want to grieve. Do your grieving in a natural, balanced way. But if you find it sticking and going on and on and on and on and on for many, many years, you might want to think about a Bach flower remedy called gorse, G-O-R-S-E, and one called sweet chestnut. Gorse and sweet chestnut work beautifully well together at putting an end to that stuck grief, when it's just kind of the kind of grief that just doesn't seem to ever want to go away. Those are great remedies, great men.
Sea chestnut or sweet chestnut?
Sweet, like in sugar, sweet.
Oh, okay.
Sweet chestnut and gorse, beautiful remedies. They work terrifically well. And finally, last but not least, would be the water element, kidney and bladder. Kidney and bladder are all about fear and panic. Sometimes, again, there's people who get very anxious, very panicky. They have panic attacks. They have incredibly deep fear. Some folks are crippled with fear. They're afraid to experiment with life. They're afraid to move on. They're afraid to fly airplanes. Or they have all kinds of deep-seated issues of control and panic issues and fear issues. And again, there's some remarkable remedies for that as well. There's some amazing remedies. Bach flowers that I recommend for those would be mimulus, M-I-M-U-L-U-S, mimulus. is a brilliant remedy. And aspen, A-S-P-E-N. Aspen is a great remedy for, and these are drops, by the way, folks. You put them in water, they're easy to take. There's no negative taste factor. There's no contraindications or side effects. So aspen is typically indicated for a water element or a kidney bladder element that's expressing its anxiety, its fear, in an unknown way. So I'm just free-floating fear and anxiety about stuff I don't know about. Like if you don't really have a specific feature to it or a specific issue that you're nervous about or that you're fearful about, you'd want to use aspen. However, if you're fearful or anxious about something very specific and you know what it is and you can point to that fact, a person, place, or thing, you want to use the mimulus. These are simple to use. They're 3 drops in 3 ounces of water 3 times a day. I do them for about 3 weeks. So 3 drops, 3 ounces of water 3 times a day, 3 weeks, watch things change. But those are the elements, and this is a little bit of something to do with them.
That's amazing. I love hearing that kind of stuff. Okay, you have about maybe 6 or 7 minutes.
Okay.
You can talk. You can continue talking about this stuff because I love it. Just pay attention to time. Or here's a question for you. You talk about, you have a little questionnaire. You have a lot of questionnaires, which are very good, by the way.
Thank you.
Life purposes. So many people call me and say, because I'm an intuitive, can you tell me what my life purpose is? I need to know. You know, but they're talking about specific things. Should I date this person? Should I do that thing? But you have some questions to make an impact, to be loved, to make peace, to systemize, to learn and teach. Is it so important to be specific, or is it more important to identify these things in your life generally?
You know, Eva, this goes back to actually what we talked about with the cardiac intrinsic ganglia, and it really ties into Chinese medicine. It's amazing, but the ancient Taoist Chinese believe that everybody on the planet, every single person on this planet that ever comes here, is here with a specific treasure behind their heart. And inside that treasure box lies the purpose and the reason for their being here. So everybody has a specific purpose, a specific reason for being here, a contribution to make to this planet, to the universe. And it's a very powerful, powerful connection that we came here to make. By tapping into that treasure, opening that treasure up. It's interesting that they say that the treasure exists on the other side of the heart. So you got to go through your own heart to find it. You can't ask Mark, you can't ask Eva. We're talking about tapping into your real authentic purpose and your reason for living and your destiny. It's in a treasure box on the other side of your heart. You have to be willing to move through your own heart and to travel through the zone of your heart's expression and to travel through the messaging that your heart wants to communicate. To me, that is the cardiac intrinsic ganglia. Again, it's the inner knowingness of your heart. It's the wisdom of your heart. It's not the intellect of the brain. It's not hearing information or advice from a professional. It's moving through the wisdom of your heart and actually traveling into your heart and asking your heart and be willing to hear what your heart has to say. I see in many cases, many of us are blocked. Many of us are shut down. Many of us are reluctant to hear what our heart wants to tell us. In fact, intuition can be like that sometimes. Sometimes you have this intuitive feeling that, you know, there's a great, great scene in a Steve Martin movie I saw years ago. And he is a man with two brains. It's a humorous movie. It's quite funny, actually. It's an old Steve Martin movie. That he said he was talking to his ex-wife, and he was talking from his spirit, you know, from his heart, from his soul. And he looked at her picture. She's deceased. She had died years earlier. And he said, honey, he says, I found somebody. I really want to marry her. I want your permission. Just give me any kind of sign. And the entire building starts to shake like an earthquake, and the picture's spinning around in circles, and you hear all these noises, and the whole world's about to come to an end, and then all stops, and he says, just any kind of sign. So, you know,
it's funny.
A great scene that I'll never forget, but actually it really has great relevance in all of our healing lives because so many of us are intuitively tapped in more than we think we are, and we know the answer more often than not because we have this beautiful connection with our cardiac intrinsic ganglia where the answers really lie. There's a soul in us. There's a soul in that intrinsic ganglia there. There's a connection piece there. We know what we're really here for, but we don't always want to admit it or don't want to hear it. So if your willingness is there, if your openness is there, if you embrace your own destiny and embrace your own heart and soul, you can't miss. There's just no way you can miss. It's absolutely impossible to miss.
So, gosh, I wish we had another hour. I could ask you a million things, both from the medical perspective as well as your philosophical view. I'm sorry we don't have more time. Please, if you would, take another couple minutes to tell us again where to find you and your new book and any other books that you've written that I don't know about so people can maybe go out and get them.
Yeah, you can get, it's one-stop shopping, Eva. If you go to my website at maxhealing.com, it's one word, max, like maximum, or maxhealing, maxhealing.com. And, of course, there's live updates. You can follow me on Twitter at Mark Mincola. And you can like my Facebook page at facebook.com/Mark Mincola. And there's a lot of information out there. If you just Google Mark Mincola, you'll see about everything you could want to see. There's a number of different documentaries I've made about natural medicine, the great results we've had helping people beat cancer and MS and all kinds of stuff. So we've had great success. And the book, really, Whole Health, is a compendium of all this. And it really kind of, again, it's my humble attempt to try to share with the world something that has been truly remarkable and miraculous for so many thousands of people, and it's really made a difference in so many lives. And I'm basically looking to revolutionize our awareness of medicine, the potential that we have within us. That's really what Whole Health is. It's a remarkable book. It really is. And not because I'm saying it, because I wrote it. I didn't write it for my ego. This book was channeled from the heart and from the soul and from my cardiac intrinsic ganglia. And I would just say that it's got a lot to teach, a lot to share, and a lot of love to pass on. So Whole Health is something that you can purchase either through our website, or they can actually go to Amazon.com or the big book chains out there, Borders and all that kind of stuff. So a lot of the big book chains are well supplied. We have a big publisher for it. We have Penguin Books, which is a company that works with Random House now. So plenty of books available out there, and you can just either go to Amazon or just check out your big bookstores. And it's called Whole Health, and I hope folks enjoy it.
It's a great book. I highly recommend it. It really is a great book.
Thank you so much, Eva.
Thank you so much for taking the time to come on.
My pleasure.
I actually hope you'll come back sometime.
I'd be honored to come back. I'd love to.
Another few hours of questions.
Love to do it.
Thank you.
Thanks, Eva. Have a great week. Bye.
You too. Bye.